How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I am Anthony Irwin. I am joined, as of right now, by Harrison Fagan. And then a little bit later, we're going to be joined by Fred Katz to talk about and preview tonight's game against the Thunder, or Tuesday night's game against the Thunder. The Lakers have already lost to them, so Fred and I kind of broke down what's going on in both teams' seasons. And we had a fun comparison about, you know, Russell Westbrook this year and Kobe back in 2005 when he was averaging 35 points a game and set the record for usage rate. As always, find our show on Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen, Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you're using the promo code LOLakers to get $20 off of your first purchase. And keep on adding us when you use that promo code. It's always great to find out about that. It's always great to find out that we're helping people save money. Harrison, how are you doing? I feel like it's more often than not that I have another guest on than having you on the show at this point, I think.
Yeah, it's been a busy couple weeks for me, but I'm definitely going to try and make sure that I'm on the show more because I just can't feel like you're trying to force me out, and I'm excited to talk to Fred later.
Yeah, you'll do fine. Fred's great, and it totally hasn't been recorded already. Let's go ahead and move on, though, to the game. And the Lakers, the Thunder are a tough matchup. And so basically what we're going to do here is we're going to really quickly preview the game, get into it from a Lakers perspective, and then jump out and bring Fred in on this. And then we'll send everybody on their way. So I'm going to give a key to the game. Harrison, you're going to give a key to the game. Why don't you go first, and I'll figure out a key after that.
Okay, so I think my key to the game is, this is going to be obvious, but it's really the biggest key for the Lakers, is they have to clean up their defense. On the season, they've only been getting outscored by 0.2 points per 100 possessions on average. They've been giving up 107.2, or they've been allowing 107.2 points per 100 possessions on the year. But over the last four games, they've allowed 116.6 points per 100 possessions and been outscored by 7.1 points per 100 possessions. So that was a lot of kind of math in there, but basically the Lakers' defense has gotten, you know, significantly worse, like a little over 8 points per game, points per 100 possessions worse in the last four games than it has been on average this year. And so I think that them starting to clean that up a little bit is a major key, but they're going to kind of face a difficult test to do that against Russell Westbrook, who is, if not, is he averaging a triple-double right now? He's got to be close.
It's probably close.
Yeah, if he's not currently averaging one, he's right on target to do so, and that's going to be tough for the team. Point guard has definitely not been their strongest defensive position this year.
All right, so for me, the key is something of the same. We're following the same kind of trend. The offense is I've never been concerned about the offense. There might be individual performances in there every so often that I kind of say, oh, I'd like for that to get a little bit better. But overall, the offense is moving along pretty well.
over the last four games, the Lakers are averaging 109.5 points per 100 possessions, which would be the third best offense in the league if it was the whole season.
And so, just so people are clear, because there are people who are more used to points per game, and I actually prefer 100 possession stats because it takes into account pace, right?
Yes.
So if every team was to play 100 possessions, this is what the Lakers would produce compared to other teams who might play slower during a game and therefore, you know, maybe score fewer points. So that's why you're using those stats.
Yeah, exactly. And the Lakers play at the fifth fastest pace in the league. So that they're going to be higher in the points per game numbers than a lot of teams just because they're going to have more chances to put up points, which is why it's like a serious pet peeve of mine when people cite points per game.
Yeah. I would agree. I would especially agree when they cite points per game, and then also, you know, they like back in the day when Mike D'Antoni's teams were playing fast, right? And they would cite defensive points given up per game, and not, you know, defensive rating or defensive points per 100 possessions that's given up. That doesn't make very much sense because
Westbrook is 0.3 rebounds off of a triple double, so he's pretty close.
All right, so my key, like I was going to say, is the Lakers have to figure out how to defend these super-duper stars. Now, I want to make sure everybody understands this. It's really, really, really hard to guard the super-duper stars. That's why they are super-duper stars, right? It's like saying, all right, today we have to figure out a way to not let Tom Brady throw passes to Rob Gronkowski. You know, it's just you can't do that. You know, unless you want to completely, you know, leave all kinds of people all over the court wide, wide, wide open. Now, like in a case of somebody like an Andre Robertson, you could leave him wide, wide, wide open because, you know, he can't throw a pee in the ocean. But the Lakers lately or, you know, consistently throughout the season, they've given up these big games to. You know, Jimmy Butler just had 40 points after he predicted to his coach he was going to have 40 points, by the way.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's like saying, I promise I'm going to make a terrible joke on the next show. You know, saying that you're going to score a bunch of points if you're a superstar against the Lakers. Paul George, I believe, now his game doesn't, you know, jump off the stat sheet statistically. But I do believe he scored like the last 12 points against the Lakers to basically put that game out of reach when the Lakers lost in Indiana. Russell Westbrook, the last game, played just about as good a game as he's played all year against the Lakers. And a lot of that had to do with, you know, the way they were guarding him on the pick and roll. So my major key here, to quote DJ Khaled, is they have to figure out ways to force the other guys on the Thunder to beat them because, and again, Russell Westbrook is averaging a triple double, so this is not unique to the Lakers. The struggle to figure out a way to, you know, limit Russell Westbrook's insane production so far, that's not unique to the Lakers' game plan. But the Lakers need to figure out a better way to do that, or else, yeah, Russell Westbrook's going to run rampant all over them, and they'll probably lose.
Yeah, so on that bright note, if you want to go to the game and see the Lakers try and contain Russell Westbrook tomorrow, I think there's no better option for you than SeatGeek, right, Anthony?
Absolutely. There is no better way, and there is no better or easier way to buy tickets online than using SeatGeek. It's a great application. The mobile, you know, the mobile stuff especially is what I always site in terms of, you know, when I'm telling friends, hey, just try it, just use this. I'm telling you, this app is way better than anything you've used before. And now, you know, I get to tell friends, if you use the app, you get to save your, you know, you get $20 back in your pocket when you buy that ticket. So that's also a great way if you're using the promo code LO Lakers. But the deal score is just, it's, you're not going to beat that. No app out there is going to give you such a clear answer as to the value that you're getting when you buy a ticket on SeatGeek. And then for you, what's your favorite aspect of the app, Harrison?
You want to take a guess?
I never know. I feel like you.
It's the price alerts.
I could see you one day throw a curveball. Like you're like Pedro Baez. Like throw a different pitch.
No, it's I'm sticking with my favorite feature. It's the price alerts. I love being told when something is available for what I am willing to pay for it. I wish every single store was like that, and so SeatGeek definitely meets my needs as a consumer in that way.
Absolutely. So, with no further ado, let's jump into this interview with Fred Katz. It, I'm sure, is going to be a great, great, great experience, especially for you, Harrison. So let's go ahead and talk to Fred.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to Fred today, and thanks for not scheduling one of these interviews again for when I'm not available.
Absolutely. All right, let's get to it, and this isn't awkward at all. How's it going? How are you holding up?
It's good. The Lakers are holding up pretty well since the last time we podcasted.
Yeah, you know, you really can't. I can't complain. We just said before the show started that had I told you or somebody told me that the Lakers would be one game back of the Thunder heading into, you know, their second meeting, that I would have called them insane or asked, you know, did Russell Westbrook get hurt or what devastating thing happened to the Thunder? I would not have said that the Lakers would be playing this well.
Yeah, so let's talk about this, because I've watched a decent – the thing is about the Lakers is that you end up watching so many of their games. It's not just because they're on national TV, like, a lot, considering the quality of team that people expected them to be. It's also because they're so often – at least this year, there have been, like, three different times where they've been the only late game on. Mm-hmm. Like, it hasn't really happened with Portland, and it hasn't really happened with Golden State, and it hasn't really happened with the Clippers, but there have been, like, three times where it's been, like, you know, 11 p.m., and I've been wanting to turn on a basketball game, and I'm like, oh, well, I guess, like, the Lakers-Nets game is the only one left, so time for Lakers-Nets, and I end up watching Julius Randle go for a triple-double. and I'm like, whoa. So I feel like I, like, know this Lakers team, because I feel like I've watched half of their games just because they're the only ones on. What do you think has led them? Because they're what? They're 7-7 right now, right?
Yes. So they're 7-7, and I think what's kind of struck me is how many people, you know, like yourself, people that I follow on Twitter that you know I just follow because I like their takes on basketball. At least once a night during the Lakers games, I'll get, you know, somebody will come up, you know, some tweet will come across my timeline saying, wow, these Lakers are fun, man. Like, every season, especially if they're the only game
on. They're actually a really fun team to watch.
Right.
And, like, regardless of talent, they're very fun to watch.
Yeah, and so I was talking to Darius on a show the other – oh, my cat agrees that they are also fun. So I was talking to Darius about, you know, Darius Soriano of Foreign Blue and Gold. I was talking to him about, you know, the Lakers and what kind of – makes them so popular among bloggers and writers. And I think it's because all of their games, you kind of have to understand what you're watching, the intricacies of what you're watching. So people who just watch a bunch of basketball kind of take that in and say, like, oh, there's a whole bunch going on underneath the surface. Whereas last year it was like Byron was running ISO sets every single play and nobody wants to watch that anymore in 2016. So it's fun to have like a hipster team, and it's crazy to see that the Lakers have become that.
Yeah, I think you kind of touched on it too, but I think one of the reasons why like non-Laker fans and non-Laker associated people might be a little excited about watching them play too, and you kind of touched on it right now, and this is probably what you were saying just now, but it's like if you ate only McDonald's for an entire year and then all of a sudden, like, you're not going to like the nicest steakhouse in the entire world, but you're going to like a quality restaurant with like a B health rating. That's going to seem like the greatest restaurant you've ever been to.
Right. Like, they have, oh my God, they have a sauce that isn't barbecue or ketchup or ranch. Like, oh, yeah. What the heck? What's going on right now?
Yeah, what is this honey mustard they have?
Aioli? That's just spelt. That's spelt funny. This what's who wrote these letters combined together? How did that work out? But yeah, and like, it's kind of funny because I think in talking about the Thunder, what's kind of interesting and what strikes me about the Lakers, and it's kind of a juxtaposition to a certain extent. But the Lakers have surprised people by how quickly they've picked up playing without Kobe and playing without Byron's system, you know, or playing with Luke's system. And I think with the Thunder, I think people kind of somehow overlooked, oh, yeah, that's right. it's weird to just take 30 shots out of your offense every night, you know? And I think people had their expectations, no matter how good Russell Westbrook is at basketball and has been this season. He's been phenomenal. I think people had unrealistic expectations for how quickly they were going to get their stuff together with Durant being gone. And it's funny, the Thunder are only, you know, they're a game ahead of the Lakers. They've won one more game than the Lakers have. And yet somehow these seasons are seen completely different. And I don't think they should be. I think the fact that they're seen as completely different speaks more to the expectations people had about both teams heading into the year.
Do you follow John Hamm on Twitter? Not the actor, the Oklahoma City radio show host.
I do not. I see his tweets. You know, he gets retweeted a bunch. So I said, well, I'll just get the good stuff when it comes across my timeline.
Yeah. So John's great. John, as I always tell John, he's the least talk, like he's the least talk radio-y person in talk radio.
Mm-hmm.
Like his takes are so tepid. he has the most like lukewarm takes. Like the only like strong hot takes he has are on like whether Ronnie Price should or shouldn't have been stretched this summer. Like he has the most tepid takes. It's fantastic. I think he's just really good at his job and he really knows his stuff. And anyway, he had a tweet the other day that made me laugh so hard. Which is, he said, Thunder fans, here's a math equation which will help you through this season. And he just had a photo attached to it, which said success equals expectations divided by reality.
That's perfect. Yes, that's absolutely
And that's kind of what this is. That's kind of what this is.
Yeah.
Like the Thunder, the expectations are, look, I don't even think they're playing below expectations. I think, look, Vegas had their line at 45 wins. They're 8-6. They got off to a really hot start against some not great teams. They had a great win in L.A. over the Clippers. That was a great win. And they played the Clippers real close at home. They lost to the Clippers by 2 at home. I mean, the Clippers are record-wise the best team in the league right now. And logistically, one of the 2 or 3 best, and I think you can argue they're playing the best right now. They by far the best net rating in the league. It's not even close. So they play them as well as any other team in the league, and the Lakers win doesn't look like an awful win. And, you know, they've had some bad losses. Magic lost, bad loss. Pacers lost to a team without Paul George and without CJ Miles was a bad loss. Detroit, you can argue, but I don't think it was second night of a back-to-back. But, you know, this is a team. It's a 45-win team. They're going to lose some teams that are worse than them. They're going to beat some teams that are better than them. Like, that's what 45-win teams do. It's a normal 45-win team now. And Russell Westbrook has been – he's been great. He's been Russ, you know?
Yeah, I think it's the way the Thunder lose games that I think makes it stick in people's minds a little bit. You know, the close games just tend to hurt more. And when it's Russell – you know, we dealt with the same stuff out here in Los Angeles when Kobe was, you know, hoisting – you know, pressure late game situation shot out, you know, hero ball shot after hero ball shot. Not to say that Russell is necessary. Well, he is kind of prone to it, but when I watch you and when I listen to people react to Russell Westbrook's late game stuff, it's the same exact conversation that we were having with Kobe in Los Angeles, where it's like, okay, yeah, Kobe shoots too much. And then you look at, you know, you look at his teammates and their shot, you know, their shot charts, and you're like, well, yeah, okay, Kobe, go ahead and keep shooting, you know, and it's I can't lie. It's been kind of nice to watch that from afar because I tended to be more on the side of I want to see Kobe move the ball a little bit more, especially when he had guys like Powell and Odom and whoever else was on his team on the good teams. Like, we don't need hero ball Kobe in those moments. But, you know, when he had Brian Cook is a starting player and Kwame Brown is a starting player and people were saying he, you know, Kobe shoots too much. I just sat there and said, he could pass to Kwame, but there's a better chance it's going to hit Kwame in the face than have anything good happen with it. And when I watch Russell, when I watch Oklahoma City fans defend Russell, I almost want to give him like a little pat on the back. You know, it's going to be okay. I promise you'll just get through this year and it's going to be okay. It's almost therapeutic.
You know, Westbrook's season, there are a lot of parallels to the 2016-17 Russell Westbrook season to Kobe Bryant's 05-06.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of parallels. That was the post-Shaq years, pre-Pau Gasol years. They were kind of a middling team. I think they played Phoenix in the first round that year, maybe?
Yeah, the Lakers.
They went up 3-1 and they blew that lead.
They did that before it was cool.
Yeah, exactly. Before 3-1 was a thing, but they were up 3-1 to Phoenix. They were a 7 seed. They were up 3-1. Mm-hmm. And then, Phoenix beat. I remember that well because that was when I was in high school. I was that was 10th grade for me, and mm-hmm. I was a Clippers fan growing up, and that was like the only year of my entire time growing up, like of my childhood, that was the only year the Clippers were good. That was the Elton Brand, Sam Cassell year where they won 47 games and they were a 6 seed and they beat Denver in the first round and they Sims came so close to beating Phoenix in the second round and they lost in 7 to Phoenix and didn't make the Western Conference Finals. They were so close. I was heartbroken by that team. So I remember the Lakers. Anyway, Kobe, Russ.
Well, what I was going to say was you bring up like being heartbroken. Tim Thomas, that was the year that Tim Thomas made that shot. And if you say Tim Thomas's name out here, especially on Lakers Twitter, that's about as vitriolic a response as you're going to get. It doesn't get much worse than that. And I remember back then I wanted to play the Clippers something back because I was also in high school and I think I was also a sophomore. I want to say I was a sophomore that year, and my coach, who I couldn't stand, my basketball coach, was a huge Clippers fan, and I wanted so badly for the Lakers to go and upset the Clippers in the next round, but it didn't wind up happening.
Yeah, well, you know, if the season ended today, not only would everyone be really confused about why the heck the season was ending on November 21st, but you'd also have a Lakers-Clippers first-round series in 1-8. So there you go. You could finally get your wish 11 years delayed. Anyway, I'm going to make the point that I was trying to make like 5 minutes ago until I started ranting about like teams led by Corey Maggette and Quinton Ross. So what was I even talking about? Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook, that dude on the Thunder.
Yeah, he was the parallels between him his and Kobe, season right now and yeah.
The usage numbers are real similar. So this is the year that Kobe literally set the record for highest usage rate ever in the usage rate era. Mm-hmm. Now, usage rate era doesn't include like Wilt Chamberlain. They weren't keeping track of possession stuff back then. Could you imagine
Oscar Robertson's response? Hey Oscar, your usage is way up this year. How do you plan? Man,
yeah. Wilt averaged 50 and 25 one year,
mm-hmm.
and like Wilt must have. Now he also averaged 48, and I think the craziest thing is that year that was the year he scored 100, and he averaged over 48 minutes a game that year, which is unbelievable. He just didn't sit all season.
Yeah.
So nowadays, like if he were in the Popovichian era, like he would play 32 minutes and he'd average like 33 points, and that season would be so much less historic. People would like basketball nerds would freak out about his per 36 numbers, and like he'd win MVP and it would be great, but no one would be like, remember Wilt's 33 point season?
Well, could that you just imagine the response if Wilt was capable of averaging 50 and Pop was sitting him out of games?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
Twitter that's would melt.
True. That's very true. But the numbers between Russ and Kobe in that 05 and 06 season are pretty similar. Westbrook's usage is a little bit higher, like 1 percentage point. But the efficiency numbers are really similar. The free throw numbers are similar. The true shooting percentage is almost identical. I mean, the numbers are really similar. The situations are pretty similar in that not a lot of shooters on that Kobe team, not a lot of spacing on that Kobe team, not a lot of offensive options on that Kobe team. Obviously, you had a big star leaving before. It was Shaq for Kobe. It was Durant for Russell Westbrook. You had a relatively new coach to the organization because I believe that was Phil was gone a year or two by then, right?
Yep.
Phil was gone. Was that Rudy Tomjanovich was coaching then?
No, actually, you know what? Rudy Tomjanovich started that season. Like he wound up being their coach. But I want to say Phil was on the sideline when Kobe scored 81, and I think that was in 05 too. So Rudy Tomjanovich didn't finish one of the years that he was there, and I want to say that was 2005 that he wound up he had a heart thing and he couldn't finish the year, and then Phil stepped in.
So we're going to have – we're going to – the beauty of basketball reference. Phil Jackson came back in 05, 06. Mm-hmm. So that was Phil was back on the sideline that year. Rudy Tomjanovich was there 04, 05.
Yeah.
And then he had to step down. But it's a similar – there are a lot of similar parallels between Russell Westbrook and between Kobe Bryant in those years. And it's an interesting thing. And it's funny because, like, Kobe Bryant's a guy who always – he clearly wanted to be Jordan.
Yes.
And Jordan's a guy who comes in at Russell Westbrook's Hall of Fame ceremony. Now, I think some of the takes, like some of the local takes this week, are ridiculous. Like, because Jordan introduced – did you see this? Jordan introduced Russell Westbrook at his Oklahoma Hall of Fame induction.
And I think he complimented the loyalty factor, right? I think
he complimented the loyalty factor. He made a comment, which he's made a couple of times before, which is that Russell Westbrook reminds him of him in his – competitiveness, his fieriness, his, you know, his the will to win, all that kind of stuff, you know, the stuff that is of Jordan legend. You know, it's funny, I think if Jordan played nowadays, no one would be saying this crap about Jordan. People would be talking about how Jordan didn't want it, because right. You realize, like, the legendary stories about Jordan would be framed so differently. Like, the most legendary story about Jordan, from Jordan, in my mind, Jordan was out at the casinos until 6 a.m. and, like, pulling all-nighters before games. And everyone was like, wow, look at how amazing he is. Like, before the gold medal game in 92, right, in the Dream Team, this was in Jack McCallum's book.
Yep.
He stayed at the casino all night gambling, then played golf, then shot, like, a Nike commercial, then on an all-nighter played, I think it was either the gold medal game or it was the semifinal. I think it was the gold game, and, like, dominated. And everyone's reaction was, holy crap, looking at all this stuff Michael Jordan did. It's amazing. And you know what? It should be that. But then we're in an era now where, like, Damari Carroll got destroyed for playing cards soberly and quietly playing cards at 2 in the morning the night before a basketball game last year. Like, can you imagine if players were doing the stuff that Jordan was doing nowadays? It would be – They'd be destroyed. No one could do that kind of stuff. It shows how much of this stuff is pure perception. Anyway,
well, everyone... I was gonna say, could you just imagine if Russell Westbrook went and punched, like, Cameron Payne? that wouldn't go over very well. And yes, I completely agree. The deifying that occurs with Jordan is crazy to me, and people seem to want it both ways. That, yeah, he was ruthless and you know, he was probably not the greatest teammate ever, and yet people say, well, that's what it took to win back then. And then now when Russell Westbrook – because I actually watched a game, the game against Golden State, that, you know, as Golden State was kind of pulling away, I was watching Russell Westbrook kind of at the free throw line, and he had the same kind of look that Kobe would get with teammates, where it was like, all right, I can't make a scene. I can't, you know, I want to snap, but I'm going to hold this in. I'm going to wait. And then in Kobe's, I'm not saying this is going to happen with Russell Westbrook, but in Kobe's case, that manifested itself in 2007. He asks to be traded to Pluto, you know, and I'm not saying again that that's probably, you know, that's what's going to happen here with Russell. But yeah, eventually the hope is Oladipo takes the steps forward that he can. Steven Adams. I've followed your, you know, your, when you talk about, you know, the team playing, his right hand, I guess, is bugging him. He has the tape on his right hand, so he isn't playing up to his, you know, expectations after getting the big deal. So I think we still have a long ways to go before we start making, you know, we start even seeing the Russell Westbrook asking to be traded to be Pluto kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, we saw how that went historically with Kobe. I'm interested to see if I hope that they kind of write the course and I think the course will be righted just by these guys playing together more, but I hope that they write the course before it gets to that spot.
Yeah, it's funny, like the takes locally this week have been a little ridiculous, and I'm not even saying anybody in particular, but just, like, you know, look at, because Jordan compared his competitiveness to Westbrook's, it's like I see a couple of things on Twitter or wherever it is, like, you know, Westbrook is the Jordan of his generation. It's like, no, no, he's – no one is the Jordan. Like Michael Jordan is the best. Like no one, if anyone is the Jordan of their generation, it is LeBron. It is LeBron James. It's yeah. it's the dude who like actually might be as good as Jordan.
it's that guy. I think it's a lot of it just has to do with how lazy people are in their player comps, right? Like Russell Westbrook, you know, I'm not saying he looks like Michael Jordan, but he's a wing-ish player. He's super athletic. You know, he likes to operate in the mid-range, you know, and do that, use that pull-up mid-range shot, especially coming off of a screen. And people look at LeBron and they say, well, no, he doesn't look like Michael hardly at all, so there's no way he can be Michael. And it's the logic used there is pretty much non-existent.
You want to hear my kind of out-of-the-box player comp?
For
Julius Randle.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this one.
He's Blake Griffin without the athleticism.
I could see it.
I'm into him, man. I didn't know where I stood on him, because he was, I know he was kind of a face up guy in high school. In Kentucky, they made him a kind of back of the basket guy, and obviously we saw him for only one game as a rookie. And if you'd see me, you'd see I was putting rookie in air quotes. Mm-hmm. And last year was just like we talked about. It was such a weird experience. Like I watched last year and I think D'Angelo Russell is so talented that I was like, okay, that guy's obviously going to be good once he gets in a system that works and a coach that works and, you know, doesn't have a teammate who's shooting 35% and chucking, you know, 90% of the time. Like mm-hmm. that he's going to be good because he's good enough to where the talent can kind of shine through there no matter what. But Julius Randle, I couldn't tell. And I think it's pretty obvious he's going to be a good player now. He's really skilled. He's a really good passer. He's really smart. Like his vision is really fantastic. He's good at putting the ball on the floor. And like he's still super young. He does a lot of the things that like a Blake Griffin, a Draymond Green does on the offensive end almost, except he doesn't quite have that athleticism. No, not quite have the athleticism Blake does. He just doesn't have the athleticism.
Very few people do.
But he's got the similar dimensions in that like he's not so long, so he's not going to be like a rim protecting four or anything along those lines because he doesn't have that length. But he's skilled enough and he's smart enough and he plays that pick and roll style where he can pass out of pick and rolls and create and make those sorts of plays. I'm into the Blake Griffin comp. I think he could be. I don't think he's that good because Blake in my mind is a top three power forward, mm-hmm. But I think he is that kind of style, and I think he's definitely going to be a good to really good player.
What I've liked watching Randle this year, so last year, the one thing that Julius Randle just cannot do, and he still isn't able to do that this year, is make a quick decision with the ball. Like the ball will be rotating over to him, and it just kind of sticks. It, you know, whether it's a half a second too
you're
long.
You're furthering my Blake Griffin comp. that was like the thing. Aside from the fact that all he does is dunk, that was like the thing that people who watched Blake every day, mm-hmm. like people knew that he was going to be able to do things other than dunk, and he was like 21 at the time.
Yeah.
But like the thing was like the ball sticks with Blake. He knows what to do. He's smart. He knows, he sees the passes, he knows how to pass, and he knows what decision to make. The ball just kind of sticks, and he hesitates to make those moves. And now it comes because he's smart. I feel like Randle is a similar type of thing because, that was exactly what people would say about Blake when he was his age.
Yeah, what Luke has done is he tries to completely avoid putting Randle in that spot where he would have to swing the ball because Luke knows that that's not going to, you know, wind up well. And the couple times that, you know, a play breaks down and it comes to Randle and he has to make that pass, it just doesn't happen. And I'm watching, you know, I'm watching Randle play and yes, the Blake stuff is also really good because the shot for me, when I watched Blake Griffin shoot, I never watched him and said, okay, yeah, he's going to be a knockdown shooter. You know, he had a major hitch when he came into the league. And with Randle, he has this really weird, you know, shot type where he can't figure out if he wants to shoot a jumper, if he wants to shoot a set shot. And both those guys, when they shoot a free throw, their shot actually looked okay. And the Blake Griffin stuff is really cool. When Randle was drafted, I thought he was going to be like a really unathletic Charles Barkley type.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of Z-Bo comparisons when he got drafted.
Yeah, but I always thought, I mean, Zebo has, you know, has that mid-range touch, you know, and had it right from the get-go. And that made me hesitant to go there with Randall, because he doesn't have that. But yeah, I mean, what I'm interested to hear your thoughts on is, if you had to pick one of the two franchises, the Thunder or the Lakers, and here's where you and I get to really annoy our listeners, I would imagine, based on our answers. But if you had to pick, if you know, given where the Thunder are right now and where the Lakers are right now, which team do you think has the higher ceiling, and then which team is more capable of reaching said ceiling? Because those aren't quite the same question.
Yeah, sure. Do you mean for this year, or do you mean moving forward?
We'll go 5 years.
5 years.
I mean, this year.
Over
it's not
the
even
next
close.
5 years, or like 5 years from now.
We'll go 5 years from now. If you were to look at the teams where they currently
stand. Oh, so 5 years from now, it's the Lakers, because 5 years from now, Russell Westbrook's going to be 33 years old.
That's a good point. Okay.
So 5 years from now, it's the Lakers. So even assuming that these teams stay exactly the same for the next 2 years, like the Thunder have a really young core, but like obviously, if your best player at the time is going to be 33 years old, then I mean, you know, Randall's going to be in his mid 20s, and you know, Russell will be. D'Angelo Russell, not Russell Westbrook, will be mid 20s too. Or 20, what is he? 20? He's 20 now. 21.
Yeah, he's 20.
Yeah, so he'll be 25 then. So those guys will all be in their mid 20s and coming into their own. And like Russell Westbrook will be almost Luke Walton's age in 5 years.
It's crazy to think. It's crazy. Like, I never even realized how long he's been in the league. But yeah, somehow I think I split the time between him. Yeah, I don't know what's going on there, but it's crazy to me he's been in the league as long as he has.
Yeah, he was drafted in 08. So yeah, I mean, the answer to that one is the Lakers. If you're asking me which roster I'd rather have over the next 5 years, though, and not in 5 years, but over the next 5 years, my answer is honestly the Thunder, and it's not because I'm a homer. I promise it's not because I'm a homer. It's because given those two options, I really like the Lakers' young players. Like, I think I've made that very obvious on this podcast. I also really like Larry Nance. I think Larry Nance is going to be a good player too, and I think Luke Walton's done a great job. But I think given those two scenarios, like I'm taking the one that gives me a superstar guaranteed.
Right.
And I think Russell can be a really good player, and Randall can be really good, but like I'm taking the guaranteed superstar option every time in that scenario. It's not like the Thunder have no other talent around him. Like Adams is 23 and Oladipo's 24. Like there are other good young players there, so. I'm taking the guaranteed superstar scenario every time.
Yeah, I think the Thunder are the by far surer bet for everything, you know, because of everything you just talked about. And then on top of that, However, I would say I think the Lakers have a bit of a higher ceiling because they have so much more flexibility to work with. You know, they have, because I believe.
Yeah, that's fair.
That I believe the Thunder are pretty much locked into this roster now that Oladipo and Adams got paid. They could move Cantor, which gives them more flexibility there. But this is kind of what you're looking at.
Doesn't give them meaningful cap room, though.
Yeah.
So, and let's be real. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. You don't need to worry about like insulting listeners or anything like that. Like the Lakers, even though the last like 3 or 4 years they've become kind of an internet meme in terms of struggling to score. Either struggling to score meetings with free agents or struggling to present good meetings to free agents, they have a better chance at signing a really good free agent than the Thunder do.
Yeah, I don't think it's just because of the Los Angeles thing, but I think, you know, watching how fans have taken to this team, if I'm a superstar on some other team or whatever, I'm kind of looking at that and saying, you know, that'd be fun. And if I step in and I lift the Lakers up or whatever, and it shouldn't be that hard to do because the core looks to be, you know, it seems to fit pretty well right now. Here, there, that seems like a pretty easy decision to make. But yeah, I would say it wouldn't surprise me at all over the next 5 years to see the Lakers and Thunder meet in the playoffs, you know, two of those times, or fight against each other for some kind of playoff seeding two of the next, you know, 5 years or so. It's a fun spot for both teams to be in, because on one end we get to see what Russell Westbrook can do and how he can lift a team up basically by himself, and on the other hand we get to see basically a blank slate, you know, and the Lakers never have that, so it's a the two teams are something I would imagine you and I are going to have more podcasts over the years, or over at least this year, where we just kind of marvel at, wow, look at it's kind of fun to be a fan of both of these teams. That's kind of cool.
We didn't even mention my boy Jordan Clarkson, fellow Missouri product.
He's an interesting guy. He's in a weird spot with the Lakers because they're grooming him for something that he is better. Like, he's the role that they're grooming him for, he's better than that role right now, and it makes for an interesting dynamic, especially when the Lakers kind of struggle a little bit. He tends to hang his head more than others on the team because I think he feels like he could do more for mm-hmm. the Lakers.
Yeah. Well, it's weird, like, with him and Lou Williams, because they're so similar in some ways. Mm-hmm. You know, like they're a little redundant, and like Clarkson's what, 24 years old. Lou Williams is like 30 and already has a sixth man award. And Lou Williams has been really good this year.
Very.
He's having a really, like, he's been crazy efficient. Is he still shooting like 45% from three? Like he's been really, really good this year. But it's kind of weird with him and Lou Williams. Like they're kind of ones, they're kind of twos. Like, it's weird having those two combo, like, ball-dominant combo guards. They're a little redundant next to each other, but, like, that's obviously not necessarily part of the long-term plan because Lou Williams and Jordan Clarkson are on very different age timelines.
Yeah, and I actually think they wind up moving Lou this year because his trade value is pretty high, you know, with how he's played this year, that somebody will come along and kind of say, hey, wow, he can actually create for others if you put him in the right spots? That's kind of cool. So because of that, I don't know if he necessarily finishes the year with the Lakers, but yes, it's been fun to watch him and Nick Young kind of revitalize their careers.
Yeah. Anything to plug before we head out?
Well, you can, fans of this show and the other show that we did earlier, you guys can always find Locked On Lakers on the same spots that the Locked On Thunder can be found on. We tend to have, we do a lot of laughing. So if you just enjoy laughing at stuff, our show's kind of for that.
And Anthony has, Harrison is Anthony's co-host as well. It's not just Anthony.
I mean, we had to mention Harrison.
that's true. I'll edit that up.
Yeah, the weird static just kicked in right there. I got to figure out a way to do that.
I'll bleep it. It'll be like one of those Jimmy Kimmel unnecessary censoring things.
Yeah, absolutely. And how about you for our audience? Because this is going to go on the Locked On Lakers feed as well. Anything that you want to plug on your end?
You can go on Locked On Lakers or Locked On Thunder. I forget what I'm hosting now. You can go on Locked On Thunder and find that, you know, wherever you listen to podcasts. And find me on Twitter at Fred Katz. And you can check out normantranscript.com or just see whatever links that I'm tweeting out that works too.
Absolutely. And Fred does great work. So all of our listeners, make sure you guys are following Fred. I really like your coverage of the Thunder. They're a tough team to follow, or they're a tough team to cover, I would imagine, because Westbrook is so dynamic that it's kind of tough to handle that. And the hot takes tend to be so hot with the Thunder that I can imagine.
The takes are hot.
Yeah.
the takes are scorching. That's why I love John Hamm.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The takes can be scorching. That's why I try to walk away from it being like, all right, let's. I feel like my take more often than not is like, all right, everybody just calm down. Whether it's because they're playing well or whether it's because they're not playing well. Like, my take on everything is just like, all right, calm down. It's November. Like, just cool your jets for a second.
You gotta pin that as your top tweet. Just calm down. And
I'll have it in all caps with like five exclamation points. Just calm down.
Ooh, I don't know if that's very calming though.
Yeah, well, that's the irony of the tweet. That's the irony of the pin.
See, that's why you're better at Twitter.com than I am. This was a lot of fun, Fred. I'm looking forward to talking to you again. I'm looking forward to tomorrow's game, even though I actually think the Thunder are going to pull this one. The Lakers have had a lot of trouble with superstars this year. Like, superstars tend to do really, really well against the Lakers, and Russell Westbrook happens to be one of those.
Well, Russell Westbrook had a great game. We barely even previewed this game. Russell Westbrook, he was great against them last time.
He was. I mean, Jimmy Butler just dropped 40 on him. when the Lakers played Indiana, Paul George scored the last 12 points of that game. Russell Westbrook played – he was as impressive against the Lakers as he was at any other game that I've seen him in. I've actually watched quite a few games, you know, Thunder games this year. It's a tough matchup for the Lakers because Nick Young right now is slotted as their top perimeter defender, and that doesn't go as well. It goes about as well as you would think.
Yeah, and it wasn't just that. I mean, we talked about this when we podcasted after the last game. Like, the Lakers' big men, their pick-and-roll defense on Westbrook was not sufficient that last time they played. They were all drifting over towards him, and they were conceding that lob to Adams. And that's something that a lot of teams have done this year, is they've taken away the pocket pass and the lob to Steven Adams on the pick-and-roll. They've really just exaggerated dropping back and forced Westbrook into mid-range, and the Lakers were obviously trying to do that, and they just didn't execute it well at all. And I wonder Luke Walton is very aware of that. I promise you, if Locked On Thunder and Locked On Lakers know it, I can promise you Luke Walton and Billy Donovan do. So that's something that I wonder how the Lakers are going to adjust in that. Not adjust. Steve Clifford would yell at me for saying adjust, because it's not an adjustment. I should say, because he's probably going to approach it with the same strategy. But I wonder how he's going to get his players to try to execute that strategy better, because it didn't work last time. And it wasn't on the strategy, it was on the execution.
Yeah, I think it just – I mean, it was early in the year, so the Lakers have now had a little bit more practice dealing with that kind of stuff. But you can never practice for Russell Westbrook. I saw him take off for a layup the other day about a step behind the free throw line. Like, there's no way that you step onto a basketball court, even an NBA basketball court. You look at that and you're not like, holy cow, how did he just – and it looked like – I don't know why he kind of freaked out when he got to the basket. He just kind of threw the ball. It wound up being an air ball. I think he was trying to throw a pass, and he just decided at the very end he just had to get the ball out of his hands. I actually think he could have made that layup, and he took off, like I said, a full step behind the free throw line. So
yeah, he kind of did that out of a half court set during, I think it was a preseason game, and almost dunked it. Yeah. And it was like unbelievable. It's one of those moments where I was just like, there's no way. I was sitting there like on the sidelines drinking drinking my iced tea. And I was just like, there's no way that he and I are like the same species of human.
I say that like, all the time. Yeah.
We have to be different. Like, I have to be some schlubbier version of a similar species, because like I was sitting there. I had a streak this year. My like notable streak of this year was I accidentally spilled on myself in press row 3 games in a row.
That's a heck of a streak.
That was my streak. Royce Young, who I sit next to during games, was really keeping track of it. He was both really excited because he was collateral damage on one of the spills.
Oh,
so there was also one of the times, which does not count in the spill streak, that I opened up a can of Diet Coke and it sprayed. So I don't even count that in the spill, because that's more of a spray than a spill. So there have been some ungraceful moments. And then like you look like 15 feet away, Russell Westbrook is just doing Russell Westbrook things. And it's this almost like insulting contrast of two different types of human beings.
My thing is, when I watch him do that kind of stuff, I ask myself, how does he even think about doing that? Like, how does that thought even cross somebody's mind that they're capable of doing that kind of thing? Like, I'll go up, like I'll see like a flight of stairs and immediately look around and say, nope, all right, I can't do that. Let's find an elevator, because I know by the time I get up there, I'll be a hot mess. Whereas, you know, he looks in that situation and he says, all right, I got this somehow. And that's crazy. That's just not even fair. All right, so that was my conversation with Fred Katz. It was a lot of fun, a lot of great stuff.
Wait,
in
what
there.
I thought I was gonna get to do this one.
Oh, when did I tell you it was gonna go down?
Oh man, that's messy. Are you serious? You already interviewed him?
I did. I'm sorry, man.
I
promise. Next one, I promise you, if I have another good guest, like if. Let's just say, hypothetically, Sean Hyken says he wants to come on the show. I promise you will be on that show.
Okay. All right. As long as you promise.
Absolutely. All right. So just a reminder for everybody, make sure you're following the show on Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Today's Fast Break. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you're using the promo code LOLakers to get you $20 off, a $20 rebate from your first purchase. So I've been doing this for long enough. I should get that better. We will talk to everybody again tomorrow after the Lakers hopefully beat the Thunder. For now, enjoy the rest of your day and enjoy the game tonight.
All right. Thanks, Anthony.
Can't wait to talking to you and Sean Harrison. That's going to be fun. And shouts to Cassie Russell.